I've been dealing with the subject of strife. If since last Wednesday you've had one of those situations with your spouse, okay, you'll have to determine if it was strife or if it was just you being the way you are. Now you notice I didn't say he or she. It could be either way on that. Numbers chapter 20 records the Israelites wishing to die. And it was a result of strife that caused them to wish to die. Look at verse 3. And the people chode with Moses. I went to the dictionary, looked up the word chode, and it means to complain, to contend, to strive. The people chode with Moses. Now, what did they strive with him about? And spake, saying, here's what they were striving about. Would God that we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. They said, we wouldn't die, just like some of our fellow Israelites died. Now, if you have a center column reference Bible, okay, I called you or texted you here about a month ago and asked about the church Bible publishers and so on, and the previous Bible that I was using did not have the center column references. And I didn't realize it. I must have had the thing for 6 years before I realized it. And I had the Bible for almost 9 years. So seemingly I got along with it without them for quite a while. But boy, when I did begin to miss them, I missed them. When it says there, when our brethren died before the Lord, and I don't know about your Bible, but my center column reference would have us go to chapter 11, verse 1 and verse 33, and then to chapter 14, verse 37, to chapter 16, verse 32 and 35 and 49. Those are other places where it tells how the people complained. And as a result of it, God brought judgment in the form of death on them. And now what these Israelites are saying is that we wish we could die like they did. And so they were complaining. Verse 2 explains why there was no water for the congregation. And they gathered themselves together against Moses and Aaron, and that's when they were striving with Moses, and they blamed him. Why have ye brought up the congregation of the Lord into this wilderness, that we and our cattle should die there? And I say this over and over again. How, in what way could they complain and say Moses forced them to leave Egypt? Now, he led them out. I'm sure he, you know, my level of sure, I'm not inspired, okay? I'm sure he was explaining to them why they should leave and why it was that he Moses was going before Pharaoh to get the people to leave. But you know, when it came right down to our saying where the rubber meets the road, you know, what was Moses going to do if they didn't leave? But they did leave. And so I think it's an unjust complaint against Moses when he says in verse 4, why have ye brought up the congregation of the Lord to this wilderness? And they wanted water. And so Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly, all of the people, unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And they fell upon their faces there, and the glory of the Lord appeared unto them. I believe the reason the glory of the Lord appeared unto them is because they were presenting themselves before God. God knew what was taking place. And the Lord spake unto Moses, verse 7, saying, take the rod, and gather thou the assembly together, thou and Aaron and thy brother, and speak unto the rock before their eyes. All right, you got all these people there. There they are, assembled in front of the rock. Now you speak to the rock, and it shall give forth its water, we'd say today, and thou shalt bring forth to them water out of the rock. So shalt thou give the congregation and their beasts to drink. So Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he commanded him, and Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock, and he said unto them, hear now, ye rebels. That's what he called them. Hear now, ye rebels. Must we fetch you water out of this rock? And Moses lifted up his hand, and with his rod he smote the rock twice, and the water came out abundantly. And the congregation drank, and all of their animals. And then God talked. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron, because ye believe me not. Now, where in this story didn't they believe God? You believe me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel. Therefore, ye shall not bring this congregation into the land which I have given them. And this is the water of Meribah, strife. You see, in Exodus 17, verse 5 and 6, Moses was instructed to smite the rock. Here, he is instructed in verse 8 to speak to the rock. Now, one of the things we need to learn from this, and that is, get God's direction each time you need it.
That's good, yeah.
Okay? Now, in general, we can benefit by learning from the past and living today from what we learned previously. But we cannot, and it's dangerous to assume that because we did something one way one time, that's the way God would want it this time. Okay? Now, you know, there's another one of them fine lines. You can't go each day as if you don't know anything. God's been teaching us. But we still need to get his direction. In the event he wants us to approach this thing similar as it is to what we did before. I mean, how many times have you bought an automobile? But each time you want to get God's direction. Okay. I mean, yeah, learn from what you learned before regarding your buying experiences, regarding your dickering skills with salesmen. And, you know, learn from all of that. But we still need God's leading. Because he might do it different this time than he did before. That's what happened here. Okay, this time he said, speak to the rock. Previously, he said, strike the rock. And so in verse 13, it says, this is the water of Meribah. Meribah means strife. That's another one of the things in the center column. I like it, okay? And then in my Bible, I'm not pastor, okay? I admire him, but I'm not pastor. Meribah, I have highlighted in orange. And then out in the column where it says that Meribah means strife, I highlighted that in orange. So when I see orange here, I see orange there. The same way when our brethren died before the Lord, that's in green, and so are the cross references in green. And that way I can quickly jump to it. Anybody who knows me knows that I love color coding things, okay? And so my sermon notes are color coded. You don't believe me? There they are, see? And so, but strife. So you see, what we looked at is examples from the Old Testament. The herdsmen of Abram and Lot strove together in Genesis 13. Isaac dealt with strife from the people of Gerar over drinking water in Genesis 26. And then strife that was among the Israelites, and it led to Korah's rebellion, which in number 16 you can read. Earth opened up, and there was the end of Korah. And now in Numbers 20, we see this development of strife and how it comes. But what I want to start at this point is why God hates strife in the church. And there are several reasons. Number one, strife destroys unity. Unity is based on the truth of God. In Jesus' longest recorded prayer, the whole chapter of John 17, we see where he brings in this matter of strife. I'm going to the Gospel of John to chapter 17 and to verse 21. Where Jesus says that they all may be one. So this is something Jesus is praying about, that they all may be one. As thou, Father, art in me and I in thee. They're one. That they also may be one in us, that the world may believe that thou hast sent me. And the glory which thou gavest me, I have given them, that they may be one, even as we are one. Strife destroys that unity. There cannot be a oneness when people are at odds with each other. We so frequently, I think it has got to be the universal, in the United States of America at least, the universal illustration of several things in a church, but it has to do with the color of the carpet. How often have you heard churches arguing over the color of the carpet, okay? But it happens. And such petty things. Now I realize if somebody likes one color, they like it. Okay, like it, but good night. Don't destroy your relationship with a brother or sister in Christ over the color of a carpet. And we all can come up with our reasons why. Well, Aunt Sadie's cousin, four times removed, donated that carpet. Therefore, we've got to keep that color. That's significant that Aunt Sadie's cousin four times removed donated it. But Aunt Sadie's not here anymore. That was in 1801. And now, here we are now, okay? And so, and something that's important, and there's certain types of us that need to remember this, and that is to not treat lightly or unkindly the other person's reason for wanting what it is they want, okay? I must work at it, okay? And those of you that have the same problem, you must work at it, okay? That when we're dealing with an issue, we got a bell situation coming up. I can't imagine how many opinions there's going to be on that. Each one matters. But listen to me. Only one can can be picked. And if mine doesn't get picked, okay, the world isn't going to come to an end. They won't lock the church doors, okay? And we need to remember. Now, nobody should forbid somebody else from expressing their view. And everybody, we're going to start up here with Tim, we're going to end up over there with Rayanne. Everybody's opinion matters. But everybody needs to remember that when it comes right down to it, we settle such matters with a vote. And if you can't abide by that, if you can't live with that, then don't come to the meeting. Just stay at home and complain about it. See, it does matter. And everybody's view should be heard. And listen, nobody should be so unkind as to audibly snicker when somebody says, well, my Aunt Sadie, cousin four times removed, donated that. Okay. No. We need to treat seriously somebody else's opinion. And you know, there's times where I have an opinion on issues that come up in a business meeting, but I don't express it. It isn't because I shouldn't or I can't. I just figure I don't need to. It really, you know, let some other people that feel more strongly on that subject deal with it, because I'm going to get a chance to vote. Okay. But strife destroys the unity of the church over whatever reasons. And listen, maybe you'll control your reactions to what somebody says here in the building. But then don't when it's over, because you know Henry and Bill, you know, they know we don't have a Bill, do we? Okay, I know we don't have a Henry. All right, so Henry and Bill know how each other thinks. And so then when they get out in the parking lot, it's over. It's voted through. But they're standing out by their car. Or even more stupidly, they're standing on the porch talking about it. It's over. It's over. Leave it alone. There are many a church, and I would not doubt, but this was one of them through its 200 years, that saw its share of strife because people were not able to be considerate of one another. There's a Bible verse about that, I believe. It's in Hebrews. Consider one another. Yeah. I don't know what chapter, but I know it's there. I'll give you something to do tonight. Consider one another. And that's what we need to do, to be considerate of one another. And the second thing, strife destroys unity. The second thing tonight is strife is the opposite of love. 1 Corinthians 13, we're all very familiar with it. It teaches charity. And charity is the action or the demonstration of love. So when strife, petty bickering exists, what we've said no to love. We are not going to demonstrate our charity in this matter. And such a Christian's life in 13:1 tells us such a Christian's life is as effective as sounding brass and a tinkling cymbal. Worthless noise. Or something that came to my beady little brain, sounds that alone are objectionable. But if they're placed in a symphony orchestra, there's the right time for the sounding brass and the tinkling cymbal. But this isn't talking about that. This is just simply saying that when we do not demonstrate by charity our love for one another, that then it's an empty sounding noise that we have. And strife then is a person that said no to love. The color of the carpet's more important than love. That's what it would amount to. Okay? How we're going to take care of that bell tower, it's more important than love. We can be unloving over certain issues. Oh, you want to see a real firecracker one? Let's talk about paving the parking lot. Woo-wee! Now, I think that's a good idea. I'm not suggesting it, though. Okay? You say, why not? It's the bottom line of it. What's the bottom line of something?
Money.
That's right, the cost. And the bottom line of paving a church parking lot would be unbelievable. Now, that doesn't mean it's not a good thing. Doesn't mean it can't happen. All I'm saying is you bring it up and you're going to find out that unity doesn't really matter to a lot of people. It's just a nifty little thing to put into your prayer when you pray audibly. Okay? And it sounds good until it's time to practice it. So, strife is the opposite of love, destroys unity. And strife confuses people, the world, who watch the church. Pastor referred to this scripture on Sunday, John chapter 13, verse 35. John 13 and verse 35, it says this: "By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if ye have love one to another." Not by the color of the carpet. Okay? No. If you have love one to another. One of the purposes for our harmony and our unity and love is that other people can see that there is a difference in Christian people. That other people can see what Christ can do for a person. But when we display petty striving and arguing, we are seen as hypocrites. That's why so many outside the church call people in the church hypocrites. Because they hear church people say one thing and then live another way. Okay, and that's strife. It confuses people who are not saved as they watch us. And then also strife alienates new Christians. When a new Christian, and even chronologically young Christians, they may not be new, but they're young in age, when they see and hear older people in the church arguing and fussing and divisions and conflicts, when they hear their parents saying one thing at home, when they happen to overhear somebody out on the parking lot or maybe in the building, they overhear them saying things, you see, arguing and fussing. These new Christians or young Christians are easily wounded. And many of these are defeated or discouraged and often drop out. And then the mature, experienced Christians get real judgmental when they talk about those people who dropped out, not perhaps realizing that they are the problem that started it. And it's easy to criticize somebody, but how about if somebody drops out? How about if somebody who's faithful in attendance would go to that home and, "Hi, Henry, you got a minute? I missed you the last 2-3 weeks at church. Is there something that we can talk about?" Okay, and again, how you approach it, don't say, "Is there something you did?" "Is there something we can talk about?" Now, Henry may not want to talk about it. You can't force him to. We need to give him the opportunity. "Henry, I just want you to know, I missed you the last few weeks. And if there's something that I need to know, I'd be happy to talk with you about it." And then you don't have to make any final absolute decisions or commitments about it. He may say something to you, you might have never thought of it or heard of it. Or even if you had, you can say, "Well, I appreciate you sharing with me that problem." It's a problem to him. "Appreciate you sharing that problem with me. You know, I'm going to pray about this, and I'm going to try and get some help on this for myself. I'm going to talk to somebody and try and get some help on this." Now, Henry might say, "Look, don't bring me up. Don't bring my name up." "Okay, I won't. But I'm going to talk about the color of the carpet." Okay, I'm going to stay with that same old illustration. Okay, and so, and even if all that's ever learned as you would come back to leadership and say, "Look, I visited Henry, and he's not been here, okay? You said you wouldn't bring his name up. You know, I understand, so you can't bring Henry's name up. Don't go there, okay? I need to talk with you, and I understand the carpet's a real issue with some people." Okay, there you go, some people. And like in a church our size, if you're talking to pastor, you know, he's not dumb. He's going to soon be able to figure out who the some people are. It's just the way it goes. And but do you get the idea? If we care about it, we can ask, because they drop out. Or equally bad, they might learn to imitate such ungodly behavior. How many times do we have trouble with an adult who they learned it as a child, observing maybe not even their parents, but other adults in the church and how they reacted to some things. And now they grow up and they're in a church and they just repeat that same kind of conduct. There's an old saying, we are our own worst enemy. This would come to play in that case. Well, God has harsh words for those who create strife. Proverbs chapter 6, and with this I will close. Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 16. "These six things doth the Lord hate, yea, seven are an abomination unto him: a proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, and heart that devises wicked imaginations, feet that be swift in running to mischief, a false witness that speaketh lies, and he that soweth discord among the brethren." God cares about unity. Jesus prayed for it. Father in heaven, I do thank you that you give us the direction in your word on how to live, how to function as a church. Enable us, dear Father, to practice.